Shabbat shalom. It's a pleasure to welcome honored guests from Israel this Shabbat for the second year running. Senior officials from the Israel National Defense College. Amazing people. The best of the best in Israel, those who are now or will soon be leading Israel's defense establishment. Tov lirotchem shuv. Take a moment, since I'm not sure everybody wished each other Shabbat Shalom. Take a moment and wish the guests Shabbat Shalom. You'll be easy to recognize. You're the ones with the uniforms. Turn to them. They'll understand Hebrew even. Even your Hebrew. Bruchim Abayim, you're welcome here. You're among family here. We do not only see you as soldiers, we see our brothers and sisters and friends. It's gratifying and good for us. Lashevet achim gam yachad, for brothers and sisters to celebrate Shabbat together and to ponder what it is that binds us so closely one to the other. Friends, you've come to a synagogue that was founded by 20th century America's preeminent Zionist leader, Rabbi Stephen Wise. A century later, we faithfully represent and dutifully carry on his legacy. We are not neutral on Israel. That is not our job. Let others, cerebral scholars, diligent diplomats, profound professors, let them be neutral. Here, we are passionate partisans. We will always stand by Israel's side, no matter what. We will never abandon Israel or give aid and comfort to Israel's enemies. We are tied unconditionally to the destiny of the Jewish people everywhere and to the destiny of the Jewish state in the land of Israel. Altogether, 100 members of Stephen Wise, over 100 members, traveled with us to Israel during the past 3 months. Two experiences for me symbolize modern Israel. The first is actually something that I experienced alone in Tel Aviv 2 days before the March mission arrived. I was having dinner with a friend who I've known since high school and whose wife works in the fashion industry. And after dinner, as he drove me back to the hotel, he told me that he was on his way to the final night of Tel Aviv Fashion Week. It's become a major event in Israel and a central destination for international fashionistas. My friend offered to take me with him. He had an extra ticket to the catwalk. Truthfully, I was hesitant. First, I was jet-lagged. Second, I wasn't sure it was really the image that I was trying to project. And third, when I'm in Israel, I'm sensitive to the different assumptions that Israelis have about how rabbis should look and what they should do with their spare time. And since many people know me in Israel, including members of the media, it crossed my mind that some paparazzi would either recognize me or that my picture would appear by accident behind a 6-foot manicured, mostly immoderately clad model. And I had flashing visions that somehow I would be on the front page of the newspaper in the gossip section on precisely the day that 65 of my closest friends were landing in Tel Aviv from the synagogue on a religious pilgrimage. But as you see, I got over it. And I went. How often do I have the opportunity for a seat on the catwalk? You know, in order to be helpful to congregants, rabbis have to experience everything. We are students of life. We need to know about what you know about. All the beautiful people of Tel Aviv were there, plus me. And on that very night, Islamic Jihad had one of its hissy fits and fired 60 rockets into communities surrounding Gaza. Who knows what for and who cares? They always have their reasons. Before the grand catwalk event, there was a moment of reflection and solidarity with the citizens of southern Israel, and then an outpouring of exquisite beauty, splendor, gorgeous people, and stunning attire. Not that I look at those things. And it struck me, here was a metaphor for modern Israel. Beauties and the beasts. Bombshells and bombs. Normalcy in an unnormal region. A fierce desire to carry on that cannot be extinguished by any contrivance, confluence, or combination of Israel haters. And not simply to carry on, but life in living color, ingenuity, vitality, beauty, the drive to compete with the best in the world and to live unapologetically and unreservedly proud and free. No one needs to feel sorry for Israelis. They don't feel sorry for themselves. They are an example of the war to the world entire, how to overcome and prevail against adversity. Look at what a people can do with a sliver of territory and an opportunity for self-determination. Let them shoot. There are people in Israel who know how to take care of these lowlifes. And in the meantime, life goes on. There's more to do, more to accomplish, more to love, more to embrace, more to discover. Love of life bubbles up from every street corner and from every fashion house, from every high-tech hub, and from every citadel of higher learning. Israelis embrace life with voracious abandon. They love life, they rejoice in life, they reject defeat, disillusion, despair, and death. And in the past few years, I've even noticed a new trend in Israel. So many Israeli men now cook. It used to be that no one ever thought of the fine art of food preparation. Who had time for that? And in any case, a generation ago, cooking was not considered to be the pinnacle of manly pursuits. But now, especially Israeli men, boast in that unique Israeli way that only fellow Jews could love or tolerate barely. They boast about their culinary skills. I want to talk about politics and international relations, and it seems to me that all they want to do is to tell me how they have perfected the art of baking bread. They think that you have nothing better to hear when you come from America than how they have learned to slice avocados in the manner of the most elegant cooking establishments. Israeli men now prefer cooking for you to going out to restaurants. It's what passes now for Middle Eastern manliness, competing over who cooks the best brisket. Only now they call it poitrine de boeuf. The current Miss Israel was in the fashion show. Now, I'm not suggesting that Israeli beauty pageants have any greater redeeming qualities than any other beauty pageant, and you'll never find me in a beauty pageant. But Miss Israel is a portrait of modern Israel. She is an Ethiopian immigrant who was destitute and orphaned at age 10 and arrived in Israel on one of the rescue missions of the Jewish Agency. As we will read in the Agada in 10 days, Mignut Leshevach, from degradation to elevation, from fear to fashion, from poverty to productivity. This is Israel, pulsating energy, ingenuity, and restless talent. The numbers of geniuses nurtured here, the Nobel Prize winners, the brilliant authors, the world-class musicians, the great universities, the amazing scientists and medical centers, the high-tech entrepreneurs who have changed the world. It baffles the mind. And we did all this. The Jewish people. We have given life to this miracle, the likes of which have not been seen in the entire annals of human civilization. It defies all reason and historical principles. We should have been dead and disappeared many times over from the pages of human history. To spend Shabbat in Tel Aviv, to stroll the promenade in the Promised Land by the sea, the gentle breezes blowing in from beyond the horizons of Jewish history, is to feel a sense of Jewish ease and contentment that no Jew has experienced ever, or for at least 2,000 years. The second experience that struck me is that we were in Jerusalem during the fourth Jerusalem Marathon. Runners from 54 countries participated, among them one of our own, Steve Eich. This, too, is a metaphor for modern Israel. You want to stand up and show them your technique. Still tired from the marathon. Jewish history is a marathon. We are in it for the long haul. We are an ancient people, the only people that emerged from antiquity. Jerusalem, established by King David, is 3,000 years old. It would be a blessing if peace were to come tomorrow. Commenting on this week's Haftarah portion, Talmudic rabbis teach, Le'olam tehe smol docha v'yamin mekarevet. Let the left hand push away, but the right hand, the dominant hand, the hand that holds the sword, let that hand always draw near. Peace is a central Jewish value. King David himself was forbidden to build the temple in Jerusalem because he had blood on his hands. We will support any peace initiative that the Israeli people support. We are a liberal community. We believe the sanctity of life takes precedence over the sanctity of land. We believe that heroism includes the courage to make peace with your enemy. Ezehu gibor asks the Mishnah, who is a hero? Mishe on se sone ohavo. One who makes his enemy into a friend. But this peacemaking in the Middle East is not a sprint. Pace yourselves. It is a long marathon. And anyone who has ever run the Jerusalem Marathon can tell you that that race is probably the hardest in the world because it goes through mountains and valleys and hills. And since we are a liberal community, we will continue to challenge fellow liberals. Do not speak the language of sprinting home. It will not happen tomorrow. It will not happen in the 9 months laid out by Secretary Kerry, and it will not happen 9 months from now. Yet another round of peace talks is collapsing as we speak. It hardly had a chance anyway. If peace in that part of the world was easy, it would have been done by now. We have been running the peace marathon now for over 100 years. It's hard to run a marathon. And it is especially hard for us because one of the defining features of a liberal is that while conservatives are suspicious of rapid change, they prefer slow evolutionary progress. We believe that people can indeed transform quickly and fundamentally. We believe that nations can change. We believe that even your enemy can change. We can imagine former enemies making peace. We can imagine a world of hope conquering fear, peace defeating war, life vanquishing death. And because we can imagine these things, we have often succeeded, despite long odds, in bringing them about. Progressives believe in reason and empowerment. We are persuaded by logic. We are confident that other people are reasonable too. If there continues to be conflict, if we have not yet solved a problem, liberals believe that it must be our fault. We haven't looked hard enough. We haven't tried hard enough. We haven't yet found that bridging mechanism, that one convincing argument that will persuade the other side to be reasonable. And thus, we are prone to exaggerating our potential. We are often shocked, to discover how many people do not think like us. They do not respond to logic and reason. They do not believe in live and let live. They do not seek democracy. They do not aspire to human rights. They are not pluralists. And because of this, we are especially prone to discouragement and disillusion when the world does not unfold as we expect. We prepare ourselves for a sprint and we discover that we're running a marathon and we have not trained for a marathon. And thus, there is a tendency in the liberal world to view Israel as holding the key to everything. If only Israel would do this. If only Israel would do that, the lion would lie down with the lamb and all would live under vine and fig tree and none will be afraid. We stand for a different liberalism here. A more realistic, a more grounded liberalism. We are committed to a better world. We work diligently for the day of peace, but we are cognizant of context. We relate to the world as it is, not only as we would want it to be. We believe in reason. The principles of science, logic, and evidence constitute the foundation of our worldview. But we are also aware that sometimes your opponent is your opponent because he does not believe the same things. Sometimes there is no killer argument for a killer. Sometimes you cannot reason a person out of something that he has not reasoned himself into in the first place. And therefore, like Rabbi Wise before us, we will continue to challenge our movement and our camp, the liberal progressive camp, to be real and to stay the course throughout the entire marathon. There's all too much emphasis on Israel's supposed wrongdoings. The volume, scope, and nature of these complaints distort reality. Even Mother Teresa could be made to look bad by prosecutors whose sole ambition is to reduce her, delegitimize her, or undermine her credibility. Our camp rightly emphasizes peace and compromise, but we do not emphasize enough the hatred and turmoil of the region. We do not emphasize enough the rejectionism of the neighbors. We do not emphasize enough the constant need to maintain vigilance. We do not emphasize enough that Zionism is a liberal cause. Its purpose is liberation and self-determination, freedom and dignity, peace and prosperity for our people and for all people. And therefore, like Rabbi Wise before us, we are not going to cede the liberal voice in our neighborhood or in our city or in our country to those self-professed, self-proclaimed potentates of political propriety that assure us that they and they alone are empowered to preach to the rest of us what constitutes true enlightenment. There's a verse in this week's Haftarah portion that I love. It captures our tendency to look on the dark side of life and our failure to appreciate all of our blessings. The Arameans were laying siege to Israelite towns. People were starving. Four outcast companions, lepers, made their way into the Aramean military camp looking for food and water. Fearing their life or their lives, they discovered that the camp was empty. It had been abandoned because the Arameans feared an attack from the Hittites or the Egyptians. The four ate and drank to their heart's content, and then they utter this verse. Vayomru ish el re'ehu, lo chen anachnu osim, hayom hazeh yom besorahu, va'anachnu machshim. They said to each other, we are not doing right. This is a day of good news. And we are keeping silent. There are real dangers today, and sometimes it appears to us that Israel is under siege. But let us also remember, Hayom hazeh yom besorahu. This is a day of good news. The dream has come true. The 2,000-year exile has ended. Bashana haba'a b'Yerushalayim, next year in Jerusalem, is reality. Jewish life is thriving again. Our people has raised Zion from desolation and made it live again. The song of the turtle dove is heard throughout the land. The green figs weigh heavy on the fig trees, and the vines give off blossom. The mountains drip wine, and the hills wave with grain. Hayom hazeh yom besorahu. This is a day of good news. Let us not be silent. The promised land has become a land of promise. Israel testifies to the resilience and the grandeur of the human spirit. Israel represents hope. It says to the world entire, if the Jews can do it, after all that the Jews endured, others can dare to hope as well.